Hello and welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
And we are here tonight to talk some more about the series finale. Series finale, part two.
Yes, part two, Electric Boogaloo. We are going to get into all of the things that we, you know, held ourselves back from ranting about last week when we were, you know, I think did a really pretty admirable job of just staying in recap mode.
If we do say so ourselves.
Exactly.
But so let's talk about maybe the biggest question that we had going into the finale. You know, then versus now, like, yeah. How did you feel about it when it first aired versus how do you feel about it, like, rewatching it at this time?
That's a really good question. I think that I felt like there were so many, you know, Twincer theories going into the finale, and I was sort of team Twincer just because it seemed so bonkers. So there was certainly an element watching it the first time of just feeling really satisfied of like, oh my God, I guessed the twist. You know, I was part of the team that thought, you know, that guessed what we thought the twist was. And so there was that element of satisfaction. I think rewatching it, that really goes away. And I'm struck with how little there is to enjoy in this finale and how sort of indistinct the liars feel and how little this finale really cares about the liars. That's kind of what stands out to me the most. I think also, I don't know. I think that like a lot of the shippy stuff seems worse to me now than it did back then. So I would say that I think this finale is worse on a rewatch than the first time I saw it. How about you?
I definitely agree. I feel like the first time that I saw it, I was kind of like, just like braced in crash position. Like
yeah.
The reveal with Charlotte had been such a bad idea, so badly handled. Like I was really concerned. Like, oh no, what are they gonna do? Like, what are they gonna do here at the end?
Yeah.
So I was glad. I feel like my sense, my main thing that I felt at the time was relief. There was like relief mm-hmm. that it wasn't worse. And also yeah. like it at least the British thing was also really stupid, but at least it did seem like Troyan was having a great time with it. And I think that like when I said she was a hero for that British accent, like that was like one of the only like even slightly fun things about it. So I feel like her sense of fun like was somewhat transmissible like the first time that you saw it. So I didn't dislike it as much the first time as I do now. Mm-hmm. But especially like having done like a pretty close rewatch of the whole series, like watching it now, I'm just like it just feels like deeply unsatisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's especially when we're watching, like, we're going so quickly from like through six, you know, season six and season seven, you really notice the things that have just not gotten tied up.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree. Well, okay. So one of the things that I feel about this is that it is by far the weakest of all the PLL reveals.
Yeah.
The whole thing is total nonsense. Like, the timeline is nonsense. Like, Mary Drake saying that, you know, she didn't even know that Alex Drake was, like, alive until she visited her in jail a few weeks ago, which, if you believe that, that means that Alex Drake solo kidnapped Hannah and Mary Drake just happened to be driving by on that darkened road. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it, like, the timeline doesn't make sense. There was very little care put into even trying to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's all jumbled nonsense, which I mean honestly, like it's not like this is the first nonsense reveal we've had. Like, we've had other nonsense reveals before. We don't want to, you know, don't want to judge it just on the nonsense-o-meter. But, like, whereas in the other, like, info dump episodes, you at least have, like, all of the liars sitting around in the cafe or all of the liars watching the hollow screen of flashbacks. Here, not the liars aren't even all together. It's just Spencer. It's just Spencer listening to this villain's monologue while imprisoned, while the other liars are just, like, you know, above ground, kind of going about their business.
Yeah, I agree. It's a weirdly, like, it's funny because nostalgia is, like, an easy button to hit, and it should be kind of a no-brainer for a series finale, and yet there's an odd lack of, like, nostalgia and, like, closeness between the characters in this episode, which I think, you know, I think that it would have been a lot easier to forgive a, like, bad A reveal if the liars got to be more involved and got to be more involved with one another.
Yeah, I would definitely, I definitely agree with that. As it is, the fact that, like, the way that this is structured, it actually makes the liars seem either stupid or like they're bad friends. Like, that the liars really don't notice any difference between Spencer and not Spencer.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I kind of, like, so one of my questions is, could Alex Drake have worked as an A candidate? I actually think she could have. I think if they had introduced her earlier in the series, had her take Spencer's place for a longer period of time, had the liars each individually have, like, interactions with her, I think all of those things would have helped. What about you?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that makes Alex Drake not work, there are two things. One thing I think is the fact that, you know, this is the equivalent of, like, reading a, you know, 300-page mystery novel, and, like, it's not even an issue of the killer is only revealed in the last 20 pages, but, like, the killer only, like, they only exist. They're introduced as a character in the last 20 pages, which is just not, like, that's just not the kind of book I like to read. I like to be able to, like, you know, kind of figure out what's going on. That's part of the fun of a mystery. So bringing in a character who, like, their existence is only confirmed here at the end, it's an odd choice. If we had gotten to know her along the way, I feel like that could have been more interesting. Or if there was just, like, you know, if you introduced her, like, if we got to see her face when she's driving Jenna away at the end of the previous, you know, at the end of the previous half season, that'd be something. But that's not what we get here. So one thing about why Alex Drake doesn't work is just the timing of when they introduce her. And I think the other thing that makes Alex Drake not work is that it's a redux of a plot line that we've already seen. It's the lost family member who has been wronged by being lost. And not only is it it's a lost family member descended from Mary Drake. Like, it is the exact same story, only without, like, the trans reveal being part of it. Not like the lack of originality, I think, is also an issue. That makes it not really work. Plus, like, the twin thing, we've already seen that with Mary and Jessica. So there's just nothing new under the sun.
And I think it also makes the whole Mary plot weaker just by the fact that it has to, you know, be related to it quite literally. Because, like, I think, you know, we had kind of talked about how, like, we were a bit surprised in this last little bit of the series that some of the more emotionally resonant moments were with Mary Drake and Spencer, and that this whole idea of Spencer sort of finding this parental figure who was unlike anybody who she'd actually ever had as part of her childhood was kind of, there was a sort of a, something kind of powerful in that. And I think that that whole plot gets completely watered down with the presence of Alex, because it's just like, oh, it's just like another Spencer family member who was, like, misunderstood and sent away. And I think it also, like, as we talked about last week, I think that Alex Drake makes Spencer a weaker character because it forces Spencer to just be in the role of, you know, good twin versus evil twin, which is like very boring. And also they had a much more interesting dynamic with that, with Spencer and Melissa.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree. Also, I think one of the things that it does regarding the Mary Drake plotline, like one of the things that was like truly interesting about Mary Drake as related to Spencer was that she was willing to be like a parental figure who would do what Veronica and Peter wouldn't, who would sacrifice themselves for Spencer, and also who would be honest with Spencer. Like that is like a huge, like that's a huge difference from how the Hastings operate. And I think that the existence of Alex Drake, which Mary had not mentioned to Spencer or told Spencer about, I feel like that definitely, like kind of changes how you look at Mary and understand like her honesty or dishonesty as we move through like the last part of the series.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that.
And also it makes like when Mary comes on the scene, she is Charlotte's mother, but she believed that Charlotte was dead. She like wanted to see Spencer so badly that she snuck into the Hastings house pretending to be Jessica. Like you get this sense that she has of just like longing for this connection with Spencer. And I feel like bringing Alex in, it kind of like, I don't want to say that it like cheapens that bond a little bit, but it definitely means that like this isn't something that's specific to Spencer any longer.
No, and it also makes it's not specific in that way with Mary, but then it also feels non-specific with sort of Alex and Charlotte, because it's like a big part of Charlotte's storyline was this longing for family with Allison, and now that is sort of that's been all twisted around. And then with Alex, it becomes about Toby, and it's like, and she suddenly decides that she wants to kill Spencer, and she ends up coveting what Spencer has rather than wanting to be close to Spencer, which I think is a lot less interesting. Go ahead.
Which is also a motivation that could be like, it could be intriguing, but have we ever gotten the sense that AD like was jealous of Spencer or wanted not even one time. So I feel like that's an idea that they had that was interesting, but they just didn't do, they didn't do enough groundwork with it to have it really land.
I completely agree. And also, as we talked about, like, Alex just doesn't seem like this mastermind character. You know, the whole sort of bit that has defined this A is the business with the game, you know, and like that, the game doesn't even come up in this last episode with Alex, you know, like there, even a throwaway line of like Mary Drake being like, oh, at the, you know, Ambrose School for Wayward Girls, Alex always loved to play Monopoly or something, you know, even something like that would have given like a little bit of something. But she just feels, this persona feels so disconnected from AD as a concept.
Yeah, this, like, Alex Drake is 100% Chaos Muppet. Like, it just seems like there's no real other way to understand her. Like, when she thinks that the police might be coming, she grabs a fire axe to try and murder Spencer before they get there. Like, that's not even basic A. That's not even, like, A101 level of thinking.
No, it really isn't. So, maybe, can we talk a little bit about, like, some alternative A candidates? Who would you have liked to see?
I would love to talk about alternative A candidates. I feel like there were a ton of options. Like, if you're going to give Spencer a twin in the last 45 minutes ever of your series, there are not, like, you know, you're not bound by the rules of, like, time or space or logic. You never were, because this is PLL.
Absolutely.
So I think bringing back a character from the dead would have been actually even more fun. So I would, you know, Charlotte, of course, we would love to see her come back and be alive and maybe have like a real redemption arc. I think that that would be super fun. Wilden, I feel like would have been, he was always one of the really, really good baddies. So having him be back and like maybe even undoing the trans reveal, maybe even having him be Charles and be like, I can't believe you all fell for that story that that they sold you. So having Wilden come back, I think would have been great. Having Ren, since Ren seems to have been at least, you know, peripherally available for this episode, having Ren potentially be AD, I think would have been a good call. Or, as you know, Prezra, always a favorite.
Yeah, I think I love all of those. A couple alternative ones that I'll offer. I mean, ultimately, Prezra is always the one that I want to have BA, right? I think, though, Lucas would have been a really good candidate because he's kind of been circling around. We've got like the creepy smart loft. That would sort of make sense in a certain way. Caleb, because he's super unlikable and also just like super involved in all the tech stuff and everything. Byron, who shows back up for this last episode, I think, you know, he would have been a great candidate. I also think Melissa, you know, I don't really want Melissa to be evil, but if you're going to go with a Spencer sibling, why not go with a sibling who we already have some emotional investment in?
It's a classic for a reason.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think any of the ones that both of us mentioned, like there would have been just this, a sense of catharsis that does not exist in this episode.
Also, I feel like don't count out Tanner. I would love the idea that like her police career really took a hit when the liars were kidnapped on her watch, when she'd gotten them convicted for various crimes, and then it turned out Mona wasn't even dead. You know, if Tanner wanted to like discredit them, I think that would be kind of an interesting through line. Or again, Marco, who's been a new character who's been lurking around, having Marco be a baddie, I think would have also been like a more interesting choice than what we got here.
I'm even going to say Hackett would have been a better choice. Honestly, you know, he's like tired of these girls coming in and ruining his school.
I love that. I love that. Well, I mean, this is like, I mean, Jenna, who's been like in and out, you know, Jenna, who's been like, is she the antagonist? Is she not the antagonist for such a long time? Like, I feel like having someone who's been around since the beginning would feel right. Like if it were Melissa, if it were Jenna, if it were Prezra, like those choices would feel like a satisfying conclusion in a way that the Alex Drake stuff, it just can't.
Yeah, I agree. And it also feels like this way of sort of having their cake and eating it too a little bit in terms of like, well, you get your evil Spencer, you get your kind of vaguely queer Spencer. And I just think that it's like, that's not how anybody wanted those things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally. Well, yeah. And when you say like, this is how you kind of get your Spencer, like, you know, there were a lot of people who really wanted it to be one of the liars.
Yes.
And so this was sort of like a backdoor way of like, oh, it's Spencer's face that's doing it, but it's not really Spencer. But I feel like that is another route. Like that would have been like a truly shocking route for the show to take.
Yes.
But like, what if the reveal that Arya had betrayed them, like what if that like kind of compounded into the fact that like, yeah, she's been taking orders from herself all along, you know? Like, I feel like that would be like that would have been shocking in a way that the show always aspired to, but never really did.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like Allison, you know, Allison came back and it, you know, had not actually been involved with the liars in the way that
oh my god, yeah, what if Allison, who has like had, you know, a personality transplant for the whole time jump and the last part of the last part of the pre-time jump period. Yeah, what if Allison was not Allison that whole time? What if you brought in an Allison twin to kind of be like, oh, did you never notice I was totally different? Like, that would have been something as well.
I actually think Allison evil twin would have been so much better than Spencer evil twin.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, yeah, because it would have made sense in terms of, like you said, the shift in Allison's personality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Just, I guess, like, the other thing that I think about, like, who would be a better A candidate, or, like, how could it have worked better? I feel like one of the big things is, like, show, don't tell. And this episode has so much clunky telling. Like,
Hannah
doing so well. I sold my software to Lucas. So I lost the loft. Like, you know, like.
Spencer, you're a paralegal and working at your mom's law firm. How do you do it?
Yeah, like, I feel like another thing that would have helped this episode a lot is if we had, like, you know, more like showing what the liars were up to as opposed to, like, clunky ass telling.
Well, and this is where I was like, what, like, why jump forward a year? What is gained by us jumping forward a year? It's like, obviously, even though we didn't really like a lot of the stuff that happened after the time jump, the initial time jump, the 5-year time jump, like, there were reasons why that we jumped forward 5 years in time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this 1 year later, it's kind of cheating. It's kind of like a shorthand for, like, well, certain things have progressed. Melissa and Spencer are on good terms now, you know. Which... Emily and Allison are co-parenting. It's fine, you know.
But, like, wouldn't we like to see more of that? Like,
yes.
Wouldn't, like, instead of, like, Spencer saying, Melissa and I are closer than ever, like, what if we actually got to, like, see some of that playing out on screen instead of just, like, we get like, about 30 seconds of it, like, of them talking about the horse. But, like, yeah, I just feel like showing us, not telling us would be way better, especially when it comes to, like, Emily and Allison co-parenting. Like, what are their lives actually like? Like, we see just a few scenes of them with the kids, and it's usually like a baby handoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, this is like such a random comment, but it's something that when I was listening to our episode stuck out to me. You know, the scene where Jenna sniffs Spencer / Alex and realizes that it's actually Alex, or actually mm-hmm. not Spencer. Mm-hmm. So that scene is so bizarre because it's like, in the story at that point, all the liars are freaking out because Prezra is missing. And Spencer just, like, goes and spends the day hanging out at her mom's law firm. Like, it's so, and it's just for the sake of having Jenna smell her. But it's such a lazy thing. And having Spencer interact with her mom briefly. But it's such a lazy thing of, like, it's just, it's so silly. It's like the right hand's not talking to the left hand at all, you know?
Well, yes. And, like, Alex is doing that for no, like, she should be with the liars freaking out. She should be watching her captives who are, like, trapped in that basement. Yes. Like, she has a lot of obligations, but, like, that little chaos muppet, what is she up to? having some paralegal daughter time with Veronica.
And I think it just exists, like, this is a thing where if Alex existed for more than just this episode, that would make a little bit more sense, but it just doesn't work.
It just doesn't at all. Also, like, I mean, I vowed that I would not get too much into how nonsense everything in the plot is, because just take it at face value, but Jenna should have already known what AD smells like, because she was in the van when AD drove her away from the school for the blind. So Jenna should not just realize that Spencer isn't Spencer. She should also, like, make the connection here that, like, there is a Spencer twin who is AD. But she just, like, it's just so contrived. It's just so contrived that then she'll call Toby, who, like, generally doesn't take her calls, but I guess they've had some clunky exposition. Well, good thing Jenna and Toby made up. Like, like now he's going to get that message and he's going to be on the alert.
Also, while we're naming random things, Kelsey was a bit dismayed that we did not criticize Arya's wedding dress enough.
There was so much going on, but yes, by all means.
It is such a hideous dress. It looks like something that you've pulled off of like a corpse bride. There's like weird yellow patches on it. It doesn't look like Arya at all.
And is this the dress she eventually gets married in or the one that she gets stood up in and then puts on the mannequin like elevated on the window stage in the Radley?
Like a corpse bride. It's that one. It's her corpse bride dress. It's also like it looks too big for her. Like it just... Well, it's so ugly.
I said I thought it looked like something that she picked up during the Grave New World period. Yes. When they were shopping at like the secondhand store in Ravenswood. It looks like Corpse Bride, I think is correct, but like Corpse Bride who like died around like, you know, maybe during like the Spanish flu, for example.
Yeah, somebody has definitely been sick on that dress. Yeah. I also think, though, that hideous dress and the hideous bridesmaids' dresses, because those are also awful, to me, they are indicative of a larger issue in this finale, which is, like, we have no idea who these characters are anymore. There isn't specific banter really being written for them, other than, like, the pecking duck scene at the end. They're like, even their fashion is like non-specific, because you think about like, you know, in, you know, like a season 4 Arya wedding dress, like a Mandy Lyon era, like what that dress would have been. It would have been something off the walls, bonkers, like hideous, but hideous in a specifically Arya way. This is just like an ugly dress. And so are the bridesmaids' dresses. And it's like, where are these characters? Who is this character? Who is this monster?
In my heart, I know that you are 110% right about what is going on here, that everything is just an indistinct muddle. Nonetheless, I am going to give these outfits a generous interpretation. I will give to them more thought than the writers or God have given to them previously. I will say that perhaps this is a metaphor for the discomfort of heterosexuality. Arya is being stuffed into a dress that is not her, just like she is going to be stuffed into this role of Prezra's wife, which is going to be equally stifling, equally ugly, equally difficult to look at, and which is like equally ill-suited to her actual personality. Similarly, these hideous like bridesmaid situations signal like the awkwardness and uncomfortableness that the other liars feel about Arya's like predatory fiance, soon to be husband.
I like that a lot. I also think, I mean, these bridesmaids' dresses are like very, very, very dark blue and black. So they're essentially funeral attire, which is kind of appropriate.
Yeah, I totally think they are. And also, I just like, when has Arya Montgomery ever been like, you know what color is my signature? Navy blue. Like, that's definitely what I want my bridesmaids to be wearing. Like, come on. I actually feel like in the final scene that has the PLLs in it, when Arya is like, all of a sudden after this like parade of like travesty wedding dresses, all of a sudden she's wearing like a shirt that's extremely colorful. I don't even know, like thinking about it now, if it's a shirt or it's a blazer, but it kind of looks like in the olden days when you would get school pictures and they would have like a laser background on them. Like that's what her shirt or her blazer evokes in that scene. And so like in that moment, it kind of feels like the Arya fashion is back. But like if Arya is not getting married with like forks as earrings, is the marriage even legitimate?
I don't think so. I don't think it is. Not at all. Not at all. And we don't, once again, we don't really get like specific vows or anything. Like, yeah. Yeah. We are, the specificity has left the building.
Yeah, I think that Arya, you know, probably she should marry either Alex Drake or Mona, and probably she should do it while wearing her Stop Men outfit.
That seems like the best thing. Also, doesn't she at some point, she has a little like fascinator hat. Mm-hmm. I feel like she should probably wear that and her Stop Men dress. And maybe those ridiculous leggings that she wore that one time. At the end of season 3.
I love that because it's like she's worn so many crazy things, but I know exactly the ones that you need.
Maybe for the reception, she changes into her skirt of ties.
Oh, man. Yes. And I think that instead of having like bridesmaids dresses, I feel like she would, like, all the liars could just wear their queerest books. Like, if we could just... If
yes.
We could just get all of the liars in their queerest outfits, and it would just be a big celebration that way.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, can we talk a little bit about queerness in this episode?
Can we?
Can we? Does it exist?
Yeah, I would love to talk about queerness in this episode.
Because, I mean, you did an amazing job walking us through arguably the queerest scene in the episode, which is, of course, the pug prosal. You gave us sort of three, you know, our Clue style rendition of that. But I feel like this episode does the thing that is often my criticism of PLL, which is that, like, queerness equals villainy again, because we have that again with Mona. You know, Mona, throughout the whole episode, everybody is saying, like, she's terrible, she can't be trusted, she's trying to manipulate you, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the episode, which we'll get to in a little bit, but, like, we have the big reveal with Mona that she's, you know, kidnapped Alex and Mary. Then you have Alex as this sort of evil, you know, evil queer Spencer. And then you have the show, like, tripling down on Charlotte being evil. There is, you know, there is the Emerson proposal. And I don't want to discount that. You know, that is something. However, it's so defanged. Everything about it is so defanged and, like, really desexualized. And they're really sort of put into what feels like a very heterosexual, heteronormative box. And I'm not saying that women getting married and having babies is to one another is, you know, heteronormative in a bad way. But it seems like they've done everything they can to make these queer characters palatable to the straights while making all of the other queer characters evil and bad.
I think there's a lot going on there. And the other thing that I will note about that is that Mona, who has always been a queer-coded character, like Mona, yes, who on this podcast, we have always understood to be a queer character, to
absolutely
be a character who is in love with Hannah.
Yes.
Like, you know, as much as I joke about not understanding what the Strahlers think is going on, like, I don't know, anybody who believes that Mona is not queer, what show have you been watching? I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
But so, like, Mona is a character we have always understood to be queer-coded, and Alex Drake is a character who, like, comes onto the scene and just is, like, kind of overpowering in her queer-codedness.
Yeah.
You know, she's this, like, street urchin, and she can't sit on a chair properly, and she's stroking Arya's hair in the darkened hotel room, like, you know,
sure,
extremely queer-coded. And so we're getting these two characters who are super queer-coded. Not only are they villains, but in addition to that, the show is going out of their way to say, look at these relationships with men, because Alex, she's doing it all for Toby, and also,
sure,
she has this complicated backstory with Ren. And so they're doing that with Alex. And then Mona is, like, able to succeed because she has this secret French boyfriend that no one knew about.
Sure.
So that's, I feel like that's a super weird, like, that's a super weird element as well. Like, we're going to queer code them, but we're also going to, like, shove them into a little closet so that the heterosexuals can think that they are firmly in their camp.
And we're going to make sure to highlight both of their mental illnesses, is not, you know, it's not bad for a character to have mental illness, but this show has a real problem with equating mental illness and queerness and villainy as, like, all three are evidence of one another kind of thing.
That's going to move us off the topic of queerness for a moment, but I think that's okay. I feel like watching this episode, it's very clear that the show does not actually believe that any, like, meaningful recovery is possible in terms of mental illness, and also that they don't believe in, like, the therapeutic process or a healing process at all. They don't believe in growth. Like, for the show, like, mental illness is, like, are you wearing shoes or are you not wearing shoes? Like, there's no in between. There's no someone is in treatment. There's no, like, someone is trying to do better. There's no, like, someone is trying to find the right medication. Someone is in talk therapy. Someone is working the program. Like, there's none. Like, there's none of that at all. It's very black and white. And basically, if you have ever struggled with mental illness, it's like you will inevitably succumb to it again and wind up, you know, capturing Mary Drake and Alex Drake in a Parisian dollhouse, because of course you will.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think, you know, there are a lot of messages that this episode is putting out there. And I think one of them that really goes along with what you just said is this idea that, like, your past defines your future, like, who you have been is who you will always be. You have, like, you know, like you were saying, growth is meaningless and impossible. You know, I think we see that with the more kind of villain coded characters, but also with the liars as well. And then it also gets into the kind of biology equals destiny thing, because Alex Drake was, you know, born a baby in a madhouse, whatever, and is, like, destined to kind of repeat the sins of her mother and of Charlotte. Which also kind of goes into this idea that, like, some people are just born bad or wrong, and there's, like, really nothing you can do to rehabilitate them, which I think is something that not only are we seeing with Alex, but I think we also see with Addison, because Addison is just, oh, she's just a bitch. What are we going to do about her? We got to take her down a peg. And, like, you know, at some point I want to talk about kind of things we really wished we would have seen in this episode. One of them for me is I really wish that this episode had been, this is maybe a hot take because I know we're not a fan of Addison, but I actually wish that an element of this episode had been about Addison and about Allie intervening in Addison and sort of helping her not have to become the next Allison De Laurentiis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I totally agree with that. And I feel like that would be a meaningful conclusion to Allison's arc, like, that she used to be this girl and now she's going to do her best to intervene. Like, Allison and Emily do a poor job of trying to help the girl who has a doll with a knife stuck through her in her locker. Like, they don't do a great job with that. They certainly could have done better, but I think it would have been interesting to, like, an interesting setup for a spinoff, which this show spends an enormous amount of time, like, wasting trying to set up a spinoff. But, like, a more compelling version of a spinoff would have been, like, someone is targeting this group of girls and Allison and Emily are, like, trying to help. Like, they're trying to protect these children. Whereas in this case, it seems like everyone in town is just, like, Addison is a devil spawn. And needs to be, as Emily and Allison are suggesting, killed, or as Jenna is suggesting, like, have her parents sued into doing something about her.
Yeah, it's a really bizarre message, and it really seems to be saying to the audience, like, oh, you thought we were on the girl's side? No, we're not. We're not on the girl's side at all. And that's, like, I think that's really echoed in, like, the whole Caleb and Hannah situation, and the way that Caleb is treated as, like, the sort of voice of God here, and Hannah is just, like, his stupid little wife. And I mean, I think that, like, other messages that are swirling around in this episode is this idea that, like, your romantic relationship is not only your entire identity, but also to be in a relationship means just like an enormous sacrifice of yourself. And not in a way of like making you into a better person, but in a way of like your wants and needs stop mattering, which is such weird messaging.
Well, it is like a byproduct of the fact that like no couples on this show ever resolve any of their conflicts. Like right. All of their conflicts still exist. It's just that the liar in the relationship has decided that they don't actually matter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also this idea of like, well, all women want babies and babies will just solve everything, you know, which is such a weird move for your show about your, you know, 23-year-old protagonist.
Well, your 23-year-old protagonist whose like entire adolescence was like sort of taken over by this like omnipresent stalker. Like, if anything, yeah. I would kind of expect them to like not really want to like rush into rush into having babies and getting married and everything like that. But the show, you know, the show feels like that's the happy ending. The show feels like getting married and having babies is the happy ending, which like that decision and including Emerson in that decision, especially as like the first to have these rape babies, it really makes it feel like very heteronormative. Like mm-hmm. The ending is like basically the ending that you would expect of like a fairy tale.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. So what do you feel like the show is saying about the role of AD based on this episode?
I mean, okay, so when we talked about would it have been a better ending to have A just like drive off into the sunset and we would like never know who they were, part of that is like there is an element of that that is the identity of AD doesn't matter. But yeah. this episode, like, so that idea was saying like in an existential way it doesn't matter. This episode is saying like it matters so little.
Mm-hmm.
It matters so little that we are going to give you, you know, we're gonna give you like they might as well have said like A was a kangaroo the whole time. Like A was a kangaroo that had learned how to text and oh look, like has been just terrorizing these liars for like whatever reason, because Hannah like wouldn't give the kangaroo her popcorn at the zoo one time. Like that yeah. That is like the level of the Alex Drake stuff, I feel.
Yeah. It does this weird thing where it's putting so much emphasis on who A is, but it's such a ridiculous reveal that it sort of doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
They kind of undercut it with how ridiculous it is.
They undercut it with how ridiculous it is. And like I kind of feel like we've talked about how the endgame pairings like all come together in like these really like not great ways. And I feel like this is also a symptom of that in that they do the reveal for AD and they make the audience feel like, isn't it sort of stupid that you cared so much? Like,
yeah.
this is our answer. This is our answer. British Alex Drake is the answer. Don't you feel stupid for having ever wanted it to be something that made sense? Like, don't you feel like, does anybody feel like, oh man, you know, I saw, like you were saying, like some people were like very interested in like Spencer having a twin. So you got to mm-hmm. feel like, okay, but like, is there anybody who is like, oh wow, I like read all these clues and I got here. I figured out that it was Spencer's British evil twin. Like, no.
And I feel the same way about the treatment of Charlotte, that it's kind of like, aren't you stupid for thinking that maybe Charlotte could be redeemed or maybe Charlotte will come back? Like, Charlotte's just the worst, isn't she? Let's, like, make it so clear in these last two episodes just how much Charlotte is the worst.
That also doesn't make any sense either, because if Charlotte was, like, irredeemable, if Charlotte did not care about her relationship with Allison, why does Charlotte stay in Welby for 5 years? Like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously she had Archer who was willing to like work to get her out through like legal means, but like, you know, it's Charlotte and she has Archer as an accomplice. She has like, she has Alex Drake like floating around out there. She's friends with Jenna. Like, she has like more than enough minions who you would think could like help to break her out at will. And yet she just stays in there for 5 years and then immediately gets murdered as soon as she's out. Like, come on.
Yeah. And it we talked about this a little bit in the episode, but it's just this bizarre thing where it's like, it doesn't really match up why Charlotte feels affection for certain people and is just sort of evil, quote unquote, towards other people. It doesn't, it feels like it's like Charlotte is a character that is just completely written to be a convenient whim of the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And of the things that were good or bad about the Charlotte reveal, like vast majority of them were bad, but like one thing that the show was very obviously trying not succeeding terribly well, but like they wanted the episode where you heard like Charlotte's confession, they wanted you to feel sympathy for her, like the liars feel sympathy for her at the end of that episode. And it seems like this is like take backsies on that, like, oh ha ha ha, weren't you all fooled. And I just, agree, you know, I don't love it. I don't love it when the show does take backsies, and I especially don't love it in that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. So what are some things you would have liked to have seen in this episode?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I would have liked to see more liar interaction. It is the last episode ever, and Spencer is imprisoned for most of it. I also would have liked to see the liars recognizing some differences between Alex and Spencer. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been really good. I think I would have liked to, instead of Hannah just kind of saying, can we really all be happy at the same time? I would have liked to like see the liars being happy. I would have, you know, again, with like the show Don't Tell, I think that would have been pretty powerful. And like you were saying about how, you know, when A is just driving off into the sunset, it feels like the liars' futures are like together. Whereas this ending kind of feels like the liars are going their separate ways. I think we saw a good liars going their separate ways ending scene when they all drove off in their cars to like their different colleges and stuff.
Yeah.
I would have liked for maybe the last scene to be like the liars all driving out of town together and like leaving Rosewood.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have been pretty, even if they were just like all going to give Aria a ride to the airport in Philadelphia, like I think that would have been fine.
I would have loved that. All of them together, all of them leaving together. Characters actually seeming to like one another would have been a real plus for this episode. And I agree. I don't think, and maybe we can talk a little bit about this, like in terms of the endings for each of the characters, like I don't think these are happy endings at all. Like Hannah ends up basically like sacrificing herself for the sake of her husband. Aria ends up marrying her abuser after apologizing to him for mistakes that he made. Spencer gets more family trauma heaped on her and then is basically like has her whole kind of narrative of her life rewritten yet again. Emily has very little agency and is being entered into a passive aggressive pug marriage. Allison has like arguably the most growth based on that that proposal, but also she's like terrible to her students. And Mona, like my beloved Mona, has I think the worst ending because even though it's kind of being framed as triumphant, she is in a new dollhouse. And like you said, the messaging is basically healing is not possible. Or at least not possible for her.
Yeah. It is rough endings for everybody. We heard that Hannah's designs were, quote, taking off, but we have no idea, like, what that means. We also don't know how that's going to interact with the fact that, like, now she's going to be having a baby. we know that, like, Caleb was, like, so hot and cold on the idea of having a baby that he was willing to say, oh, maybe we shouldn't, over Mona briefly staying with them. Yeah. So, you know, things are not looking great for them. Things are not looking great for Arya, who, like, I guess the best thing I could say for Arya is that she's going to get a ton of money in the divorce. Because, you know, he's rich and he's done a lot of bad things. So, you know, I look forward to her eventual divorce settlement. Spencer is like re-traumatized. And after all of the time that they have spent on Spencer and everything with her family, like, the happy ending for Spencer is that she gets to be sleeping with Toby again. I don't love it.
Yeah, well, apparently she's closer than ever with Melissa and her mom, but we don't actually really get to see any of that.
Well, and did they say that at the beginning of the episode or at the end? Like, I just feel like, you know, Veronica also did not notice that it wasn't Spencer. She's like, oh, a rock star, you've never called me that before. But then, like, you know, no follow-up.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's also just like such a shippy focused happy ending. There's no, like, there's so little focus on the Liars' careers, or even like weirdly, you know, Prezra gets a scene with Byron, but like Arya doesn't really get a scene with either of her parents, other than Byron briefly comforting her when Prezra jilts her at the altar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hannah's last scene with Ashley is Ashley saying, like, you're wrong. Mona is the devil and you should believe your husband. You know, Emily doesn't get any last scenes with Pam. The last person I have a scene with Pam is Allison.
And then Emily starts a fight about it.
Exactly. You know, it's just, it's, and then also, you know, you, the whole thing with, like, Mona is, like, Hannah kicks Mona out, presumably, and then, like, that just ends up being completely unresolved. The Liars never thank Mona for helping them, and, like, presumably Mona, you know, goes off and lives in France and with her kidnapping victims and her French boyfriend. Like, I feel like the way this finale sets it up, it's like maybe they never speak to Mona again.
Yeah, 100%. Also, we've talked about this before, as, like, the Liars have moved through the last part of the season, but the Liars never get to figure anything out. They don't even get yes. to figure out that Alex is not Spencer. They, like, none of the clues that they have chased have ever led them to a conclusion that was anywhere, you know, that was anywhere near the truth. And I feel like that especially is I'm over it here. Especially, like, they would not have even found out where Alex was if Mona hadn't come to them with the coordinates. And, yeah, of course, that Mona would come just with the coordinates, but wouldn't have already figured out where it was. Like, no, you need the man. You need Caleb to enter it in the computer. And then for Toby to be like, I never found out who bought my house.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and like, you know, it's this weird thing too, where kind of the mysteries of this whole season become weirdly irrelevant in this last episode. And it's like, if this episode had been just the Liars, like, existing, and basically the conclusion was like, yeah, we never found out who A was. Like, if the time jump, rather than being a year later, if it was like 10 years later, maybe, and it was just like, this is the Liars' lives and they never found out who A was. And that's okay. Like,
and how does it affect them? Like, how yes. does not knowing
yes.
like, enable them or, like, prevent them from going about the rest of their lives? Yeah, I think that would be very interesting, but
it would be a lot more interesting than what we got.
Well, also, like, so, oh, what do I want to talk about? Do I want to talk about Mona, or do I want to talk about? Yeah, okay, let's talk about Mona for a second.
Okay.
So, Mona being in charge of this dollhouse, which a lot of people are like, Mona won the game. I mean, Mona has given herself, like, a life sentence here.
Yeah.
Like, Mona is not going to be able to, like, have a regular life, which we know that Mona herself had wanted. Like, she didn't want to get involved with the game again. Like,
absolutely.
You know, it, Mona has, like, been forced by, like, circumstances and by Hannah's indifference into this situation. And it's just, there's a movie that I often think about when I think about this ending for Mona, and it's called Secret in Their Eyes. And it has Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman in it. It's a pretty good movie, but in this movie, spoiler alert, if no one has seen this movie, which is like easily like at least 5 years old, probably more now. But in this movie, like Julia Roberts, someone commits a crime against her family, and Julia Roberts winds up finding them and imprisoning them. And at one point, another character discovers what she has done, and she says, it's a life sentence. And he says, for you too. And then he says, I think you look 100 million years old. Because, like, it is not easy. It is not easy keeping someone a secret captive and, like, dealing with everything that goes into that. I know that, like, Mona is, like, hyper-adrenalized reality, but, like, we know that Mona has wanted different things for herself. Yeah. And it is a shame to see the show decide that, like, the truest and happiest version of Mona is going to be, like, as the warden of her own dollhouse. Like, that puts Mona back in the dollhouse that Charlotte had her in. Like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not a redemption. It's exactly like you said. It's putting herself back into a jail. And I rarely do this, but I am going to wreck a fic that I actually wrote because I was so upset by this Mona ending, so upset that I actually wrote a fix-it fic called Fly to the Devil You Don't way back when. And it imagines a softer future for Mona. So I think that, you know, we can't have enough of those. I also was thinking about, here's my spoiler alert. This is going to be a spoiler alert for the end of Friday Night Lights. But I was thinking about, like, I was thinking about earlier today, like, series finales that really embraced character growth. And one of the things that I really love about that series finale is that so much of this show has been about Coach Taylor and his career and how his career impacts his family in this town. And in that series finale, his wife, Tammy Taylor, who is also an educator, gets the opportunity for this really amazing job. It's a job that nobody who, like, worked her previous job would get offered, but, like, don't worry about that. And this conflict is set up where he really doesn't want to be the one to have to make a sacrifice. And one of the things she says to him is, it's my turn, babe. And they end up making the decision that he will make the compromise for the first time in their marriage, and they will actually go where her job is rather than doing what they've always done, which is to go where his job is. And it's an incredible moment of growth. And it's also a moment of great sacrifice for the character. But and just in comparison to the way that PLL ended, like, I don't think, yes, we're seeing these characters sacrifice things, but it's not in a way that feels linked to growth. It's actually in a way that feels more linked to, like, depression, honestly, and just, like, kind of a lack of connection with one's partner and a lack of being in touch with one's self. And I just wish that the show had been able to embrace that sense of, like, look how far these characters have come.
Yeah. I was thinking about when you were talking about, like, the idea of Allison or the other liars, like, intervening with Addison in a meaningful way. I was thinking about the series finale of The OC, which now, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen the series finale of The OC, which is, like, even further back in the time warp than the other things we've been talking about. But on The OC, like, Ryan Atwood is kind of the, like, character who's been, like, you know, the rough and tumble kid, and he gets adopted by, you know, the Cohen family after, like, Sandy Cohen is, like, his court-appointed lawyer or something like that. And in the end of Ryan's arc, he like sees a kid on the street and asks him if he needs help. And like, that is actually a great ending for that character, because like, he has like gone from being the person who needs help to the person who is like caring and compassionate and in a position to help somebody who is in his situation. And it would be like very easy to do that with Allison. But we just, you know, we take a pass on it because like the characters are not, like the show treats the characters like dolls. They are not really allowed to grow or to change or to develop.
Yeah. And it's interesting just thinking about the fact that, like, I think so many of the people who watched PLL kind of had grown up and had gone from teenagers to young adults on this, you know, with this show. And yet the show is so sort of stuck in the mindset of who these characters were as teenagers.
Well, we've talked before about the way that, like, the show was on for many years, but the show did not really evolve with the times.
Yeah.
In the way, like, the show started out like having much better queer representation than anything else that was on television at that moment, but them doing that like really allowed other shows to like kind of, you know, come through and like pass them on the outside, to the point that like by the time it got to the end, like the way that they treat Emerson is like very antiquated, like, oh, they're in the hotel room with like the sheets up to their chins, you know, like it's just, yeah.
Well, and that Presria, like, I think a lot of the fans by the time we got to the end of the series were maybe younger when the show started. And at that point, you know, by the time the show ended, could recognize like, oh, no, this is actually a very fucked up relationship. And yet the show was still so insistent on being like, no, 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 it's true love. It's true love. Mm-hmm. Just can't kill it. And, you know, it's like and insisting on making Presria this like good guy character. And it's interesting to me how, like, the shows that have come after Pretty Little Liars, like, it does seem like there's been, like, we talked about Cruel Summer, for example. Like, it does seem like there has been this real effort to kind of, whether consciously connected to PLL or not, sort of undo some of the damage that I think PLL created.
Well, and look at, you know, look at Riverdale, which is like,
sure,
know, really, I think kind of became like the initial spiritual heir of PLL, you know, on the network and just in the kind of dark tone and in the way that it handled a lot of stuff. And look at on that show, what was the, oh my gosh, there was like the music teacher or whatever that Archie is involved with initially.
Yes.
And like, that's always treated as gross. Like, that's always treated as like a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. Yeah. What else did you want to talk about?
Okay. So I just did want to talk a little bit about like, what this says like about the mystery, which has always been like a main theme of PLL. So I'm gonna list some things that were resolved in this last half season ever of the show, and I would like you to like give me a rating, maybe 1 to 10.
Okay.
1 being not at all, 10 being oh, couldn't be happier, about these reveals, and how satisfying you think they were.
Okay.
Who killed Jessica?
So 1 is not satisfying at all and 10 is very satisfying?
Correct.
I'm going to say 1.
Okay. Who is Charlotte's father?
Oh, 0.5.
See, you picked like the, you know, 1 I think might be the highest we get here. Okay. Who is AD?
Oh man, I'll give it a one.
All right, yeah. All right. Who bought Toby's house?
-1.
All right. Like, the point is, there are these reveals that we've been waiting for such a long time.
Yes.
And the show,
the mystery of Toby's house was really killing me.
The show is like, okay, we're gonna give you the answer, but like, we're gonna do it in a way that like, you're gonna just wonder why you even ever cared. Like, it doesn't change anything. for any of these characters. And it just, it doesn't feel satisfying. Okay. So now I'm going to ask you some questions, having, you know, we have like watched, we have recapped, we have like thought hard about and written about all these episodes. So I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to answer them the best you can. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So, Vina.
Yes.
Why did Noel kill Sarah Harvey?
Because she thought there was a pot of gold under the Radley? No, that's not right. Some other reason. Why? Do you know?
Why? Oh, okay. Well, it seemed in the moment like she was on to something that Jenna was doing. Like there was something that she needed to like warn Emily and the Liars about. Yes. But like, what was Jenna up to at that time?
Yeah. No, no, I don't know.
There's no answer.
Like, there's no answer.
No answer. Like, Noel just killed Sarah Harvey because fuzzy. Like, that's why.
Because he wanted.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. So, Vina.
Yes.
Who kidnapped Hannah from the Lost Woods Resort? And who poked her with a cattle prod?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say Noel, but I'm not confident in that answer.
I think we have to think that it was Alex Drake, because Alex Drake is the only person who's ever confirmed being there. Like, she was there when Hannah was having that dream. And Alex Drake says that she was not working with Mary. Alex Drake says that she was not working with Archer, although who knows why she wasn't working with either of them. But so Alex Drake says kind of that she was working alone. She was this lone wolf operating, that Jenna had like hired Noel to track her down. So maybe Noel was working with Alex, but we don't know. We don't know. If Noel was working with Alex, why wouldn't Jenna know who Alex was? Like,
Fuzzy.
So, like, not only are you giving us unsatisfying conclusions to mysteries that have been mysteries for a long time, but, like, things that were, like, motivating factors during this post-time jump period have no solution. Like, the writers don't know the answer, and the writers don't, like, care about it enough to, like, even remember that it was a question.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, well, we hope you'll forget about that. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
When Noel told the Liars that he couldn't let them go because they, quote, knew too much, what did the Liars know?
What did Maya know? I think the Liars knew. I think the Liars knew that Maya had a niece who was going to be friends with Sydney Sweeney.
Oh my God. You know what? When they started talking about Maya, I felt like, keep Maya's name out of your mouth. Like, I felt like, was there any reason that they had that girl be related to Maya except to be like, well, this is probably going to be the queer one.
Right, I know, or just like, well, Maya's a character who existed, but then like that raises a bunch of questions about Maya, because I'm like, wait a minute, did Maya, because like we already have the whole thing with like Maya's fake cousin, so then I'm like, did Maya have a sibling we didn't know about? Like, did like that's another one where like it's such a throwaway line, but it actually raises more questions, I think.
Oh, like, why would they ever want to raise a kid in Rosewood, the town where Maya was brutally murdered?
Yes.
Many, many questions.
Yeah, this finale really raises more questions than it provides answers.
And not like, not good questions.
Right.
It's not one that leaves you, as I said when we were talking about it before, it doesn't leave you wanting more. It leaves you just feeling like, womp womp.
It's wild to me that this episode has such short scenes, relatively speaking, and such unsatisfying answers, and yet it feels like it's 10 million years long.
Yes. Well, the exposition, it's because it's so exposition heavy, and it's because, like any of the episodes, they structure this way because the liars never figure anything out, and it's just these, like, long explanatory speeches by people. But in this one, it's just Alex Drake trying to, like, provide a bunch of explanation to Spencer. And, like, worse than everybody hanging out in the cafe together, the other liars are, like, on a completely separate journey where also nothing is happening.
Yeah, yeah. And we're supposed to be worried about, like, oh, what happened to Prezra? Where's Prezra at? What happened to him?
Like, things that I would have liked if during Prezra being kidnapped, if Arya had been like, you know what, guys? I think this is a sign. And, like, gave Emerson her wedding so that they could get married. I think that would be super nice. I also think, like, Jason standing at the church door would be nice. Like, there are just, like, if they took, like, Prezra's kidnapping to have Arya, like, reevaluate that situation, like, okay, it's true, he didn't actually leave you at the church, but you seriously thought that he could have. Like, you seriously thought that fight the night before could have been enough for him to do that.
Well, and I mean, what would have been, when we kind of had talked about it, I think, at the time, but, like, if the Addison storyline had ended with us finding out that Prezra was trying to get with Addison, and, like, that was, like, this was the way that we were putting an end to that cycle, is that Arya and Allison, Prezra's young victims, team up against Prezra and protect another young girl.
Would be fantastic.
Would be fantastic.
You know, though, if they had gone that route, the show would have been like, oh, that Addison, so irredeemable. She was seducing him. Like, you know.
No, you're right. It would have been bad. Yeah.
Well, have we more to say about this?
I don't.
It sure was a finale.
It sure was a finale. Maybe, you know, to talk about, like, maybe we could just say, like, what are the things that we hope happen for the liars after this episode?
Oh, what a nice thing to think about. So I always say, like, I want the liars to have, like, more than usual happiness. Like, yes. I really want them to have, like, happiness commensurate with, like, the misery that they all endured during the run of the show. So I would like them to all be in, like, you know, if they want to be in happy functional relationships, that is a pathway that is open to them, preferably with new partners other than the people they've been involved with here on the show. So I want career success for them. I want them to be, like, blazing new paths. I have a fic where Hannah winds up becoming a therapist, which I think would have been a really great journey for her character. I mean, those are the, like, the kind of things that I want for them. It doesn't wrap up as neatly as, like, oh, a husband and a baby and a house with a white picket fence right here in Rosewood. Like, it's not quite that. It's like going out into the big world and kind of, like, I want them to have a chance to, like, really discover themselves in a way that they were maybe thwarted from doing. And I want their friendships to remain really strong.
Yeah, I like that answer a lot. I mean, I think what I would really hope is that Mona is able to get the help she needs to once and for all free herself from the dollhouse and to reconnect with Hannah. I would hope that Arya is able to get out of that terrible marriage. I would hope that Spencer decides that she and Toby are just better as friends. And maybe there's, like, a little bit of scorched earth there after, you know, he repeatedly was raped by her, you know, face-matched sister, which is, like, a weird thing that they don't really circle back to. You know, I think Hannah should kick Caleb to the curb, and I want her to keep being successful in doing the work that she loves. And, you know, Emily and Allie, like, I'd like them to be able to figure out how to have a functional marriage. I really would. I don't know if that's possible, but I really would like that for them.
Yeah, it would. I agree. it is like deeply unfair that we don't even see Emerson get married. We see the proposal, we don't see them get married, and then they are the first couple to divorce. That is just it still just makes me so mad when I think about it.
It makes me mad too. It makes me mad too. Also, this is maybe a slightly nicer topic. Do you want to maybe shout out a couple of series finales that you really love?
Ooh, fun. Okay, so I'm going to say that I never watched the series finale. I never watched the show, but I've watched like the last minutes of the finale like several times in my life, and I think it's really affecting. But it would be 6 Feet Under. I think that the last like the last few minutes while the song is playing are like very beautiful. So I like that finale quite a lot. I talked about the OC. I don't really remember a lot else about how the OC ended, but I liked the Ryan Atwood bit. Let me think about other shows that have had, here's one that is, I think it would have been kind of similar to A Driving Off Into the Sunset, but the finale of Angel, the series. I didn't love it at the time when they're like prepared to like fight this army of, you know, the undead or whatever. But I feel like that was like a right and just conclusion to that series. What about you? What are some of yours?
Yeah, I mean, 6 Feet Under definitely is a great one. I would say the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend finale. I really love that one. Really do love Friday Night Lights. The last season is like kind of weird, but I really like the finale. And even though I don't like a lot of the content that came after the series finale proper, I really do like the series finale of the original run of Sex and the City. I think it's a really good series finale.
Yeah. I would also say Parks and Rec is one that I like a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that also kind of like, it uses some of the flash forwarding, you know, that PLL is always doing time jumps with. Love that. This is like, this is like kind of a mean thing to say about a show that I have like had as many complex emotions about as PLL, but I feel like having assessed this finale, this is on the same level as the How I Met Your Mother finale.
That's like, that's probably my personal other least favorite finale besides PLL. And yikes, that is rough. But you know what? I can't disagree with you there. It's because both are finales that feel like a slap in the face to fans. I think that's what it comes down to.
It's like saying you were silly to be invested all this time.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah.
I'll say another thing about like this finale, like this episode, more than a lot of other episodes, it gets very meta about being the finale. Like we have this like stupid attempt to soft launch the spinoff that has no new ideas that no one has asked for. Like you waste a lot of time kind of spinning your wheels on that. And you give it to these other characters. Like you give it to this random kid in Allison's class to talk about how sometimes you're sad when a book is ending because it was really good. Like, I just feel like if you're gonna try to get meta, like do what you were saying, like go for the nostalgia, give those lines to like actual lines. Hires. Like
I agree.
It does not make sense that we're spending like the limited minutes that we have left of this show like on characters who don't matter and who are never going to matter in this universe.
And I think I totally agree. And I think by focusing so much on this sort of soft reboot idea, is it's basically communicating like, oh well, it's just another cycle. Like the liars were not there wasn't anything really specifically great about the liars. They're just like, this is what happens in Rosewood, you know? And it's, I don't know. I think it does a disservice to the characters. Another finale that I really do love is the Buffy finale. I don't think it's a perfect finale, but there's a lot that I love about it. And I think that's that show. And I talked about this a little bit last week, but I think that show does a thing where it's sort of setting up almost within the universe the idea of like the next generation, and yet it's doing it in a way that is absolutely paying tribute to the existing characters.
I would agree with that. I would also say another, like, it's tough to say that this is a series finale that I like, because then the series, like, sort of came back in a way I didn't love. But I would say that the series finale of Gilmore Girls is one that I liked before, like, pre A Year in the Life, which I did not care for. But, like, the actual series finale where you got to see, like, the whole town and you got to see, like, everybody kind of, like, celebrating together and, you know, sure. Lori kind of going off to, like, seek her fortune. I felt like that was, like, a hopeful finale, and that it, like, it hit the beats of what had made that show good when it was good.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Do we have anything more to say about this finale?
No. I think in many ways, the less said about this finale, the better. But we have now had two episodes about it, so that we can just get it all out.
We can never speak of it again. a brief housekeeping note. We are going to take the next 2 weeks off. We will be back at the end of April with some bonus content. We've got a whole slate of bonus episodes that we're looking at and content beyond that period of time. So never fear, the podcast is not ending just because the series has ended. You know, there will always be more to say. That being said, if you have thoughts on bonus episodes, or if you have thoughts on series finales that you loved, or just anything that you feel like sharing, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, everybodyapodcast. You can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. But this is it. This is the finale, folks. This is our two-parter. We did it. We did it.
And we didn't talk in British accents in this episode at all.
Governor. Couldn't resist. All right. So until next time.
Take care.